Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlo. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Hey.
Hi.
You look all nice and cozy today for Coffee with the Sarlows.
I know. I already had my coffee, so I don't have to hold anything.
And
so
this is not two-cup Kelly?
No. I'm just snuggled under a blanket, properly caffeinated, and ready for a story.
Okay. I've got one for you. This client session happened to me like all morning long before I saw the client.
Okay.
So I want to describe some of that first because it was just freaking lovely. And then all of it comes into her session. So I just want people to hear that first in case I forget to say something in the storyline, but it all comes to the client when her session starts. But earlier in the morning, as I'm just doing my errands, I'm just pottering around outside the house and stuff, I hear a man talking to me, dead man, of course, and he has such a sweet accent. And I've been trying to copy his accent for this show.
I can't wait.
I have been trying, but I just don't know that I'm going to do a good job of it. And this is part of the importance of when I deliver the message to the client, because he had such a beautiful, deep voice, which I don't. And this is how he addressed his oldest daughter. And I'm going to try it.
Okay, can you just pause for a sec? I need people to understand something about these dynamics. I get so nervous for other people to embarrass themselves to the point that, like, when I'm watching audition shows on television, I have to change the channel when the audition isn't going well, because I viscerally cannot.
How are you going to change this channel?
I don't know. I'm so nervous for you right now. And I also get this sensation of, like, I need to pee when I'm nervous. So I don't know what's about to happen.
Let's just jump into it so your nerves can go away. I hear a man saying, "Well, hello, sweet pea."
That's not an accent. That's a deep voice.
Oh.
Are you more embarrassed?
I am, because he did have an accent.
What kind?
Texan.
Oh, like a twang?
Yep.
Yeah, you didn't do that at
all. I didn't do it at all, did I?
No, you just went baritone.
Okay, that did.
That was totally miserable. I don't have to pee anymore. Go ahead.
Okay, so he has, pardon me, it wasn't even pee, it was sweet pickle.
Oh, God.
Jesus, I got so much of this wrong.
Okay.
So much.
Hello, sweet pickle.
Hello, sweet pickle.
Okay, go on.
So he calls his oldest daughter sweet pickle. And as the morning goes on, I hear this every once in a while in a different kind of way that he speaks. So sometimes I'll hear things like, "Now, sweet pickle." So I won't do the Texan accent because obviously I don't know what it is well enough to do it. But it's the way he says it. "Now, sweet pickle." And he uses tone of voice and he uses key words to convey his emotions, his expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it in such a way that there's love and that there's kindness. And that he's trying to say, "You need to get a hold of yourself. I'm not dysregulated. You are."
I just want people to know that I am deriving deep joy with my imagination of all the listeners who have paused the show to practice saying "Now, sweet pickle" in a Texan accent.
Because I can't.
Yeah. I'm getting joy from him too, but like the idea of listeners doing this just makes me smile. Go on.
Okay. I hope that they are then as they're listening to this. Maybe listeners can actually talk during this podcast and reply to everything, make their comments in a Texan drawl with sweet pickle. So anyway, this occurred in various ways. And you can tell by the way he speaks that he's doing particular things. It takes time for me over the course of the morning to figure out how loving he is, how kind he is. that never once is he trying to manipulate and control his daughter. He's simply trying to say it in such ways that it brings attention. He's helping her bring attention to her own emotions, which is just gorgeous, such love. And he lets her kind of do her own processing. And then later in the morning, I don't hear Sweet Pickle anymore. I hear him calling somebody Buttercup. And I'm thinking, did I get that wrong? And he goes, no, I have more than one daughter. And when I called her this, my middle daughter got jealous that I had a nickname for the oldest daughter. So I had to come up with one for her. And he says, I didn't think too hard and long about it. Just out of my mouth one day came Buttercup. And I saw how much my middle daughter loved it that I gave her a name mm-hmm. and nickname. And he said, and I made sure that I used Buttercup in only one way with one tone of voice. And it was just always love because my middle child is jealous of the oldest and she's hypersensitive to criticism. So I had to make sure that I didn't do the same thing that I was doing with my oldest, with my middle child. And he says, boy, did that ever play out through life. Like he says, I got to see what happened as a result of that and not dealing with it more directly than I had. He says, I learned a lot of lessons about the mistakes that I made in that, even though I was trying to love both my girls. Mm-hmm. He said, I made mistakes doing it. So I ended up telling my client this, who is the oldest daughter. And when I told her that stuff about the two nicknames, she said to me, holy cow, she said, Karen, I really appreciate hearing that from my dad because I have always suspected my sister of being jealous of me because of behaviors and the way she's treated me. But because of other behaviors where she does do something nice after she's been miserable to me, or she does say she loves me, I haven't been able to quite put my finger on it that it was jealousy. I've suspected it, but every time I get close to feeling that I'm right, she does something nice and I think I'm wrong. I think I've misunderstood. And I keep giving her the benefit of the doubt, but dad is coming in and actually telling me my sister's been jealous of me her whole life. Mm-hmm. And she goes, while that makes me sad for her that she is feeling this way, I know my dad and there was no reason to. And I also know how much I loved her and my mom did. There was no reason, like really deeply for this. So now it's kind of allowing me to feel my anger. She says, and I'm going to process that after the session, but I thank you for what you just did.
Yeah, it's validating.
Yeah, because I could never get to my anger because it wasn't being validated, that it was actual jealousy. Mm-hmm. And that the things that she did do were mean. And that's where it was coming from. It was coming from her own anger. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's all correct. And I said, may I continue? Because your dad had other things this morning. And she goes, yeah. She says, I'm loving this. So then I said, well, he also showed me this morning a poem. And she goes, what poem? I said, it's a specific poem. And all I can tell is that it's a poem that was read at his funeral, because I see like a funeral home when I see the poem. And she says, yes. And I said, in the poem, it's about him and how he loves everybody. And it's also about loving him and who he was. So there's a few things in the poem. It's love, like his way towards you guys and you guys towards him. And she said, that is exactly it. She says that we wrote that as a family and each of us contributed. That's why it went different ways. She said, some of my siblings didn't follow the assignment. She said, we were supposed to write how we loved dad. And some of them wrote how dad loved them, made mm-hmm. them feel loved. And the day of the funeral, I realized that it was a mess. And she says, and I just decided it didn't matter. I decided not to put it together in this is this and this is that, A and B. I went from oldest to youngest, and I just read it as it was. And she said, so you're actually describing it really well. And what I decided to do with it, to not get involved or be judgmental, but just to simply read it for what it was. And she said, you're literally telling me that my dad knows about the poem.
My favorite thing to do at funerals is watch the dead person watch their funeral.
Yes. Yes, me too.
Figuring, yeah. Like watching where they go, who they're looking at, what they're listening to.
Yeah, and what's really of importance to them.
The eye rolls.
Yes, as opposed to, I'll say sometimes a religious ceremony. Mm. Where somebody's doing something to help the family grieve. I want to word that, you know, as best way I can. But the person who's died isn't even focused on that. They're sitting in the audience with their family and mm-hmm. standing beside the person that's speaking when someone has to get up and give a speech or something. Anyway, she said, holy geez, she said, I love the fact that you're telling me my dad knew about the poem mm-hmm. and what I did with it. She says, that is lovely. She said, it was one of the questions that I had written down on my page was my dad okay with what I decided to do? Because I made that decision in how to put that together and read it. And she says, there was a squabble about it. And I just made the call myself because I was the reader and I just did what I wanted. She says, I'm really glad to hear my dad approved of it and heard it and really enjoyed it. Then in the middle of the session, I started coughing. And I said to her, I don't know what's going on. I don't have a cough. I said, and I couldn't finish my sentences. And then I would stop. I'd take a drink of water. I could kind of go on for a little bit more. And then the very same kind of a cough would start. And she said to me, you said you don't have a cough. And I said, no. I said, I was just going to ask you. She says, I think I know what you're going to ask me. And you're right. She says, go ahead, though. And I said, did your dad have this cough at near the end of life? And she goes, yeah. She says, at first I thought that was just freaky, but she says, you've been doing it like 2-3 times. And she said, it's just the way that you are coughing. And then the way that dad would need a gulp or two of something, it would go away. And then maybe 5 minutes later, it would just all start up randomly. And sometimes like he just never knew when it was going to hit him and like in a row, or if it would just be a one-off. And she said, I wanted to see what happened to you. That's why I was waiting. And I didn't ask you right away, but she says, you have the very same cough as my dad. So she says, that's really weird. She says, I don't know what that's called. She goes, but I'm sorry that you're coughing like him, and I hope it goes away right now, because that's not good. It did go away. And then I said to her, the next thing I actually was going to tell you was that when I was driving around to go to the grocery store this morning, I said, I had all the windows rolled up and I could smell pot in the car. And she goes, she gives me this look. She goes, I know exactly what you're talking about. She goes, you go ahead. She goes, this is so beautiful, Karen. She says, she says, you go ahead. I'll tell you in a minute. So I said the little story to her that he had told me, and it was about that her and her girlfriends got caught by him in the car smoking pot with all the windows rolled up. And he went out to the car and he said to them, okay, you're going to take a walk and you're going to go into town and you're just going to go, like, it's a half hour walk. You're just going to get into town. You're going to blow time for a couple hours. Here's $20. Go. And he said, and then you're going to come back later. So they thought they got away with it. They thought, oh, he's so cool. No, he went and told all the mothers. He needed time to call all the mothers. So he called all of the parents and said, so I caught all the girls smoking pot. And they all died laughing. He was explaining, like, they had all done that kind of thing themselves. But then they all talked about it and said, okay, this is what we're going to do and yada, yada, yada. And so when the girls came back from walking into town, they were feeling a little bit better because I think something about that they were gone for hours or something. But when they came back, they thought they got away with it and they found out, no, in fact, actually, he had called their parents and every single parent, and that all parents were not up, they were not angry. They just all decided that they were going to sit down and just talk to their girls about it. That was it. And I don't remember if there was a whole lot more that happened about punishments or anything. It, that wasn't so much the story. It was the fact that he made them walk into town, mm-hmm. gave them money for lunch, and then had them walk back. But that all the parents were told and that they were being held accountable. Mm-hmm. And that the parents, I guess, to some degree, some of them wanted their daughters to talk to them about what they were doing mm-hmm. and not behind their backs. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. So anyway, she says to me after I told her that, she said, Karen, she says, this is a story that my dad has repeated with great delight my whole freaking life. Mm-hmm. Every time I brought home a new boyfriend, dad pulled this story out at the dining room table. She said, so it makes complete sense. And she says, and I have to tell you, this warms my heart that I get to hear the story one more time, but it's from my dad. Because now I bring a guy home to mom and the story doesn't come out. Mm-hmm. And there's just this sort of little moment for me like, yeah, dad would be saying this right now. And she says, you know, sometimes someone else in the family, like mom, will bring it up and go, well, if your father were here, he'd tell the story about you and the pot in the car. But it's not the same. And she says, it's so beautiful just to sit and hear my dad tell me the story again. So she just sat there. She actually had a little cry over that and then just thanked me. And then at the very end of it, she says, do you have any messages for my brothers and sisters? And I find that's common mm-hmm. that that at the towards the end of a session, sometimes not, sometimes earlier in the session, people will say, do you have messages for other people? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I find that people who crossed over are very obliging and go, yeah, and mm-hmm. they give all kinds of messages. He did not. He said no. He said that that he thought it was important for his wife to have her own session with any medium she chose, and that she used her own intuition to connect to him. So that was the mom's message. And then he kind of went through like his second daughter and said, I'm not giving you any messages because you need to book your own appointment with somebody you trust and make your whole time about you because you've never valued your sister in her life anyway as somebody that I'm allowed to love and that I love you equally, honey.
Time, meaning to the middle daughter.
Yeah. And he said, you need to have like your whole time to yourself. Not a message from your older sister that you're already jealous of, mm-hmm. Where you're already going to be annoyed and defensive and attacking of the messages. So I'm not setting up the daughter that I'm talking to mm-hmm. to give you the message that you need to do some growing up. You need to deal with some of your own insecurities. You need to see that I loved you. You need to see that I did my best to be your father. That can't come through the sister that you have all this animosity towards about mm-hmm. me. So no. So there were some solid no's,
yep.
which I thought was really good. And then there's a younger brother and he said, no, he says, I'm not giving any messages to your younger brother because he calls himself science. Oh. He calls himself a skeptic. And he says, I'm not putting that on you to try and go to the skeptic in the family mm-hmm. and to try to prove to him that any of this is real through your messages and through your time with me. You booked the time with me. You're the one that chose to be present with me. And I'm not putting that responsibility on you. It's his responsibility to not over prioritize one part of the human experience or the brain. Or whatever you want to call our experiences, just humanity. It's no one else's responsibility but his to figure out that he's over-prioritizing. And that
over-privileging.
Thank you. Over-privileging. And that's actually going to present as a problem to him in his relationships because he doesn't actually value emotions very much either, but he won't admit that. But he's doing the same thing with intuition and emotions. Mm-hmm. He thinks facts, which he calls science, is the only way to be in life. And he doesn't want to feel vulnerable. He doesn't want connection. And that's a massive problem that I tried to speak to him about all of the time, but he didn't value my intuition and me being a role model as his dad, where I felt my emotions and I shared them. He didn't appreciate that. So I'm not giving him my time either. And it's not out of anger. It's out of each of them learning their own responsibility in life. Mm-hmm. So that was her answer and explanation. And she sat there and went, I feel relief.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
She goes, I think what Dad's saying to me once again is that it's not my responsibility to fix my two siblings. And it's something that my mom and my dad have been telling me my whole life, that their issues are not my responsibility. And yet I keep taking it on and I try to people please them to have connections to them, and they keep working at breaking the connection. I think I need to listen to my dad. She's and my mother and stop this behavior that I'm doing. She says, so I'm glad that the session is ending where it's just my dad and I. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I said, he's purposefully all through life seen each of the three of you individually. He's tried to teach you individually. He's tried to love you as each for who you are in different ways. And he's tried to accept each of you for who you are in different ways. But he's come to realize that that acceptance of parts of your siblings that were unhealthy, and in saying, oh, but I'm supposed to love them all unconditionally, wasn't the healthiest decision he ever made. And it did not make him a healthy parent. And he's apologizing to you today because you do not have a healthy sibling between the two of them. So you feel very isolated and like you're an only child. And she said, oh my God. She said, I've been feeling like an only child my whole life with these two. And she says, it's giving me a lot of comfort, Karen, and clarity and understanding to finally hear from my dad. As much as he loved them and my mom, the things that they did that weren't healthy, even though the tone of voice was right, the nicknames were there, and they were trying in certain ways. She says, I appreciate Dad showing up today to help me understand this.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
He did a great job, and so did you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's really fun. Like, we always say, like, our slogan, I guess, if you want to call it that, is clarity, direction, and relief. Mm. And, or relief, clarity, and direction, I guess, in that particular order. And so I love when a client actually can become aware of it in their body and in their brain too, right? Because clarity is a visceral feeling of relief.
Yeah.
And then she's got a way forward. Even if that is just knowing, okay, my siblings aren't on the same page. We're not doing the same kind of growth. My direction is my life and my responsibilities, which is not the over responsibility of another person. So I think it's beautiful all around. Thank you for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, please be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform and leave a review. New shows will air every other Saturday.